This is Life I Swear, where we share stories and reflections from Black women about trials in their lives that have helped them heal, connect, and process. Every week, we hold space for storytelling that both challenges and inspires us to be good to ourselves. I'm your host, Chloe Dulce Luvueso. In today's sit-down, we have Esther Boykin, a dear friend of mine. I love Esther's ability to articulate and remind me of the fundamental things we should all be doing to keep ourselves in check and on track emotionally. Esther is a marriage and relationship therapist. For 15 years, she's run Group Therapy Associates, a psychotherapy practice in the DC area, and she's on a mission to support healthy relationships and accessible modern mental health. She also runs Therapy Is Not a Dirty Word, a series of retreats that encourages self-love and normalizes discussions around mental health. And that's what we're here to talk with her about today. In our quest for love, what are the best ways to put love for self first? What are the patterns that keep us from surrendering? And are emotional intimacy and vulnerability interchangeable? Esther, thank you so much for being with me today. Since day one, you've been a friend, and it hasn't been that long, but it feels like the right timing, because you came into my life when I was thirsty for this kind of connection, and I'm glad we've, it's just felt like you and I have been eye to eye since day one. Whenever we sit down, we just like kiki. So really being at a place in my life where everything feels fragile, and you're kind of picking your life back together, you're picking up the pieces, and you don't know how to do that except through faith and knowing that there are other women who have been there and walked that path and are being like, you will get through this. It's been so meaningful to me. So I want to start with this question, because it is such a dear question to me. But what does coming home to yourself look like for you? And what I mean by that is, when everything feels fragile and chaotic, how do you return to yourself for peace and comfort?
So it's my favorite question, and I think like the hardest question to answer. And it's funny you said that, because for me, I feel like we do see eye to eye, and it's been, you're like a nice reminder for me of all the pieces that I've already picked up. Because mm-hmm. I think when you feel fragile and like it feels like everything's coming apart and you start to like put it back together, you forget how many pieces there were. Like mm-hmm. you just get so focused on what's missing. And so mm-hmm. for me, part of coming home to myself is about having people at all the stages mm-hmm. sort of like rebuilding that community, while simultaneously actually making space for yourself, which yeah. is something that I personally struggle with, like quiet time and time to actually just notice what it feels like.
Yeah.
Which I think is sometimes like the least helpful answer, but coming home to myself is a feeling.
It's like being present in the moment.
Yeah. It's something that I have to like get quiet to notice.
Yeah.
On the inside.
Yeah. Because otherwise we often coast.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So you and I have talked a lot offline about how therapists need therapy.
Yes.
And literally no one is exempt from needing an outlet for mental wellness and support. So how do you balance being a nurturer and a caretaker of other people's wellness and their emotional needs with also attending to your own?
With a lot of practice.
Yeah.
With ongoing daily efforts. I mean, really, I'm laughing, but that's the truth. Mm-hmm. I think that it's hard. And I think mm-hmm. in general, as women, it's hard. I think we are often, whether it comes naturally to you or not, we are definitely socialized and encouraged to take care of others ahead of ourselves. Yeah. And then I add the therapist layer on top of it. Like, that's literally my job. My job is to be good at caring for other people. Which means I have access to a lot of information. Like, I know what to do for mm-hmm. myself. But I would say probably over the last 5 to 7 years, I've really begun to like be much more intentional about noticing yeah. how that also create pressure around for myself around that, because I know what to do. And so when I'm not doing it, rather than being gentle and compassionate with myself, I'm mm-hmm. like, you know, you're supposed to be doing more self-care, mm-hmm. like, which is not how any of that works.
So right.
for me, it is, taking time, like really, mm-hmm. I feel bad sometimes for my staff, people who work yeah. with me, because I'm like, I feel like lately I've been in a constant effort of like rearranging my schedule
mm-hmm.
so that there's actually scheduled time that's just for me, like that I don't do anything yeah. or that I spend with friends or, you know, whatever yeah. I need to.
And that, like, I think the notion of self-care is that there are specific practices you have to do, but sometimes self-care is literally stillness
yeah.
and just being.
Being
with you. Being.
Yeah.
Period.
Absolutely. I like to say self-care should be a lifestyle. Self-soothing is like very yeah. specific things, right?
They're like physical.
They're physical things, or, you know, I had a really rough day, and so like I call my best friend, or I'm feeling really tense, I go get a massage. That's more self-soothing.
Mm-hmm.
Those same activities, when you build them into your life,
mm-hmm.
is self-care. Like self-care is about the way in which you show up for life every day, mm-hmm. every week, every month.
I love that.
Yeah.
The way you show up for life. So I'm going to ask you one question, a little practice. What's your shit?
Ah.
We all have it.
Oh.
So what's the thing that keeps you up at night? What's your struggle? And, you know.
Oh, that's cute. The thing.
The thing. There.
The thing. I mean, how long are we going to be on this podcast? You know what? If I collect all of the various things, it really sort of comes down to, I think the question I ask myself most often is, am I doing enough?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It's this constant kind of feeling of, am I doing enough? Am I doing enough as an entrepreneur? Am I doing enough as a therapist to my clients? Am mm-hmm. I doing enough as a mom? Am I doing enough as a friend or a daughter or whatever? Am I doing enough for myself? Mm-hmm. Like there's this, that's the shit that kind of keeps me up at night. Because there is this internal part of me that feels like I always need to do more. That's mm-hmm. the, like,
no matter how much you do,
no matter how much I do, I always feel like I need to be doing more. Like it's never quite enough. Never quite. It's not even the good enough. It's just not quite enough. Mm. I should be working harder, more diligently. More,
yeah.
I should be more of something.
Why do you think,
oh.
why do you think that nags at you?
I mean, so part of it is, I think a lot of women struggle with that. Mm-hmm. I think there's a lot of social pressure,
yep.
especially as Black women, around being all things to everybody, which means you always have, there's always something more to do. And on a personal level, I definitely just sort of some old relationship patterns of feeling like I needed to prove myself.
Overcompensate.
Yeah, that I needed to, yeah, that it was, that I was loved because of the way I showed up and took care mm-hmm. of others, rather than loved simply because of who I am and just the fact that I'm present
Your
in the
essence,
world.
Yeah.
yeah. And so it does, I mean, it does less frequently than it used to, but it
yeah.
does keep me up at night sometimes.
What's been your journey in kind of going from that place of, not deficit, but of
yeah.
overcompensation to now feeling hopefully sometimes, you know.
Sometimes I'm able to be like, you know what?
Just me is plenty.
Yeah, this is plenty. This is all I
yeah.
got, guys. And that's
yeah.
that's more than enough. I think one of the things that for me has been most challenging, but probably also has helped me in over time, also as a therapist, like being better as a therapist, as a mom, as a, in all of my own mm-hmm. relationships, is recognizing that it's hard for us. It's hard to just notice and own the mm-hmm. things that are less helpful, right? Like whatever our shit is, mm-hmm. our pattern, our those like negative sort of internal stories, like just noticing it and recognizing it and like taking the time to like own that, like, oh, this is my thing.
Mm-hmm.
This is a thing that I'm going to have to like not condemn, but like come to terms
mm-hmm.
with. And then I can like have a lot more compassion for myself as I like unravel that.
Yeah.
And it's funny, I hadn't thought about this, but now that I'm about to say this out loud, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, this literally underscores the entire reason I do all the things I do professionally.
Yeah.
Is probably the biggest part of healing that and like in continuing to heal that has been the relationships that I've cultivated. Like,
yeah.
Literally, it just, you need the experience of being in relationship to yeah. people who just, all they ever really want is for you to show up fully and be present. And,
yeah.
And that's really, really, it sounds easy and it sounds wonderful.
To cultivate relationships? Oh, it's
hard. To just be, yeah. And like to like be yourself in these yeah. relationships. And I think,
because we go into relationships scarred from previous ones.
We do. I have to say.
Scarred by yeah. expectations. Yeah. Scarred by, yeah.
All of those things. And I think what is interesting and probably challenging for me now is recognizing something I know in my professional work when I help mm-hmm. other people, but having to live through the reality is that the things we say we want to mm-hmm. find in a partner and in a relationship, the more that we get,
yeah.
the more it holds a mirror to the things we have to work on. And so like dating and like being, you know, with somebody who is not expecting me to take care of them and overfunction mm-hmm. for them and do all of these other things. And just this kind of like, well, just, you know, you just show up and be you and I'm going to show up and be me. And that's cool. Like, that's a mirror for all the ways in which I haven't even noticed
yeah.
that I think I need to do more. And yeah, so it kind yeah. of helps you to, it's helpful for the work, but it's not always comfortable.
No, but I think the work is going to always yeah. be, like, it wouldn't be work otherwise.
Right. That's why we call it work.
Yeah. I love something that you've said before, which is that you create spaces for your clients to be whole and messy, mm-hmm. complicated and human. And that's, mm-hmm. I just read that earlier today. But why do you think Black women in particular don't give ourselves permission to be all of those things? Or what patterns is kind of blocking us from surrendering?
I mean, the simplest answer is because other people don't let us be all of those things, right? Mm-hmm. Like, society, culture, mm-hmm. family, you know, race, relations in America, like
yeah.
whatever, all of those things come together to really say, like, this is who you're supposed to be. This is how you have to be. And there is no room for, you know, if you're crying, you're hysterical. If you're angry, you know, you're mm-hmm. a bitch. If yeah. you're whatever, if you're doing too much, you're...
So you have to hold it all together.
Yeah, you have to hold it all together and sort of constantly hover in this space. That isn't how, like, that's not how humanity
works.
Yeah,
it's not even natural.
It's not natural. So already we live inside mm-hmm. of, I always think of all of the places, the cultures we live in as mm-hmm. like concentric circles, right? Like the family you grew up in,
right.
maybe a relationship you're currently in, then, you know, the broader culture of whatever mm-hmm. community you're in, the country you're from, like all of that.
Yeah.
And from all of those places is this message that it's not okay to be complicated. And people are complicated. Like,
yeah.
we're layered and we're lots of things. And I feel like therapy is and should be, like, sacred space.
Yeah.
It's a space. And it makes me sad sometimes and also very, like, humble to realize that for a lot of my clients, sometimes I'm the... Their therapy session with me is the only place in their week.
Yeah.
Or their month or their life.
Yeah.
Where they feel free to be all of the parts of who they are.
Yeah, absolutely. There's such a drive for perfection and control mm-hmm. That blocks us from being at peace with our messiness or even accepting yeah. it, giving it space. But I do think that once we know we are not the only one living in, you know, living... seeing the world through like a lens of our own complications mm-hmm. and other people are doing the same. It's like a shared humanity that
yeah.
that can be beautiful once we can all come to the table. And that seems to be what you're doing with Therapy Is Not a Dirty Word.
I'm trying.
Right? Yeah. Can you tell us more about that?
So Therapy Is Not a Dirty Word is basically a collection of, I like to say it's the collection of everything I do outside of the therapy office, right? Like, mm-hmm. so it's, we do happy hours, we have a podcast, we do all kinds of random mm-hmm. social media stuff and retreats and like all of these different things, sell shirts.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, the underlying sort of goal is about saying like, I want people, I want therapists to get out of their office.
Yeah.
And I want people to understand that what therapy is really about, mm-hmm. right? Like, it is a space where you get to be, where you can find comfort in simply just showing up and being who you are, mm-hmm. and having that be acknowledged as like worthy and validated. And so I think that's something that, that's definitely something I feel really passionate mm-hmm. about. I think that, you know, therapy works because it's a relationship. And I think mm-hmm. that relationship can go beyond just the individual therapist client to like mm-hmm. creating these larger opportunities for people to feel connected to other people who are experiencing the same things.
Right.
Because
right.
that stuff is without like the human. Stigma. Without right? the stigma. Exactly. Like, it doesn't. So I'm big on trying to show up in places where people already are, mm-hmm. as opposed to like going to therapy. Like, you got to come to my office.
Right. Right. I love that. And you also do, you're also great with emotional intimacy. And I wanted to talk about that. Okay. Because for me, I always consider it to be what happens when there's a safe space to share the messy and share mm-hmm. the complicated parts of ourselves. But how do you define emotional intimacy? Because I think it can be seen in such different ways.
I mean, I like your definition. Yeah. I think, to me, emotional intimacy is feeling seen and heard and valued.
Mm-hmm. Do you think it's interchangeable with vulnerability?
I think vulnerability is the road that leads you to deeper emotional intimacy.
Mm-hmm.
Vulnerability is sort of is a process. And I mm-hmm. think emotional intimacy is sort of is more of a feeling or a connection mm-hmm. that you're constantly, well, hopefully, cultivating with yeah. different people, right?
Like yeah,
it's,
I love
it's
that.
It's that sense of knowing and being known.
Yeah, yeah. So for me, I feel that I'm a complete empath. I love intimacy, and I'm also pretty transparent about my story. So what do you think is the boundary we should set with emotional intimacy? Like, is it a journey in getting closer to someone? Or yeah. is it, you know, flipped?
So I think it...
And that we should be careful who we trust with our...
I think we should always be careful, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, sort of your heart, your spirit, yeah. like who you yeah. are as a person, like that's, it's so valuable. Like mm-hmm. we should be thoughtful about who we give
yeah,
it to
of course.
And how much of it we give. So I do think, to me, emotional intimacy is a journey and like a practice mm-hmm. so that it's how close we build upon the closeness, right? We build that intimacy over time. You cultivate that. And then there's also ebb and flow in that.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that there's not a magic time frame, right? Like, well, I've known you for a month, and therefore this is how much emotional intimacy we can have in our
right,
relationship.
Right, right.
I've known you for 10 years, and therefore you're like somehow mm-hmm. entitled to a certain level of closeness with me. I'm like, that's not really how it works. It really is about what does it feel like when I'm with this mm-hmm. person, right? Like, do I feel safe? Do I feel like I can be myself? When I do begin to share, you know, when I am vulnerable, I share parts of myself. Mm-hmm. How do they respond to me? All of that sort of adds up to whatever the emotional intimacy happens in that relationship. And like, and it does, it varies and
yeah.
it goes, it can
it's
be really
linear.
Deep. It's not linear
right.
and it's not constant.
Yeah. Yeah. And I do struggle with that in some relationships, just the ebbs and flows of intimacy we share at different seasons of our lives together.
Yeah.
Which can be taken personally, but it's just life's
yeah, it's just
sometimes.
Yeah, and being in different spaces, and I think, you know, if we're lucky, we have a couple of people in our life where the intimacy is sort of constant, even though like contact and like actual mm-hmm. interaction, you know,
you
I
just
think,
know what it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, you just yeah. right. You know, we have like I got a friend, and sometimes it's literally just, how are you? Terrible. How are you? Terrible. All right. Well. I literally yeah. don't have time to call and talk about this, and neither do you. But when we do get on the phone in 2 weeks,
yeah,
it's the same. And if we're both, whatever, it goes a couple of months, like the connection is still there. And for other relationships, it needs more. Other
yeah.
people need more like day-to-day tending
mm-hmm.
and being okay with that ebb and flow. It doesn't make anybody bad.
Yeah.
Or better than anyone else. It's just
yeah.
how it works.
It just is. Yeah. So as we think about wellness and wanting to kind of live live better, love better, forgive ourselves? How do you, how can Black women give ourselves more grace?
In tiny little baby steps.
Mm-hmm.
That's, I mean, baby steps are like, it's my favorite advice. Baby steps get you everywhere, because the idea of going from really like not having a lot of self-compassion or having a lot of mm-hmm. pressure on yourself and or not feeling like you know yourself really mm-hmm. well to like having a lot of grace for yourself, like that can feel daunting. So I'm big on like just little tiny steps, like yeah. what's one thing today that like you hear that negative like critical inner voice mm-hmm. that you can just say, you know what, I'm gonna grant myself like grace over guilt or punishment or shame mm-hmm. today. Like I'm a human being.
Yeah.
I made a mistake, or I had hoped I would get that done and I didn't, and that's yeah. okay. And then I think practicing grace for other people.
Yeah.
Because I think kind of tying back to the emotional intimacy, that's so much of what is valuable. I think
yeah.
at the end of the day, I am a firm believer. It's why I'm a marriage and family therapist, which is, yeah. you know, not the best sort of like name for a license or a graduate program, because it sounds like I only do very specific things. But basically, it just means all of my education, my whole focus is about relationships. And like, relationships drive us as humans. Mm-hmm. That's how people work, is, you know, we care about our connection or lack of connection to other people. And I think using relationships as a place to cultivate a skill.
Mm-hmm.
We're not good at granting ourselves grace. Can we try to like have grace for others first
mm-hmm.
so that we know what it looks like? And it also cultivates a relationship with another person who, if I extend you grace, the likelihood is that you start to extend, you're going to extend me grace when mm-hmm. I screw up. And that becomes the model for how I want to be able to treat myself.
Right. I love that, thinking of it as a skill.
Because
yeah. so many people think of it as a purpose, serving a purpose, mm-hmm. filling a void, you know, solidifying yeah. our identity, you know, how a relationship is a reflection of us.
Yeah.
And so we think of relationships almost in a selfish way. But when we think of it as a skill-building opportunity to give more, then we'll always have more.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you.
Of course.
Awesome. Thank you for listening to Life I Swear. You can follow Life I Swear on Instagram. And if you haven't yet, subscribe, rate, and review this podcast wherever you get your podcast fix. And learn more at lifeiswear.com. I hope you join me next week for another episode. In the meantime, be well, friend.